As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Gonin on this Monday, November 7th. And as usual, I'm with Arpin Basu. Hello, my friend. What's up today?
Hello. What's up today? Today is travel day for the team. Neither you nor I are going to lovely Detroit, but they are going to Detroit to face the Red Wings. Had a really interesting practice on Monday. Not going to get into that too much, but it was long, really long. Martin Saint-Louis mentioning how they hadn't had much of an opportunity to practice lately. But obviously the big news of the day is something that we're going to tackle here, sort of the roster situation, the extra forward situation coming to a head with Rem Pitlick winding up on waivers. We'll see what happens on Tuesday at 2 p.m. in terms of whether Rem Pitlick will remain in the organization or not. But this seems to provide temporary respite with Evgeny Dadonov slated to come off IR and seemingly having a chance to play in Detroit, though Martin Saint-Louis wouldn't confirm that. What are your thoughts on how this whole thing played out?
Well, Pitlick, since the beginning, was one of the candidates that had a decent chance of ending up on waivers. Probably, maybe not the most likely, but I think that what was interesting with him was the fact that since he has another season to his contract, the Canadians might think, well, here's our protection against him being being claimed on waivers. He's got another year at $1.1 million. But the fact that even though it runs for another year, the salary is palatable enough that I think there's a non-zero chance that he might get claimed. I think that other teams might have seen what he's capable of doing in the second half of last year. You know, he proved to be a bit of a Swiss Army knife type of player, energetic, could be used, well, mostly on the wing, but in a pinch can be used as a centerman. And
he can kill penalties.
He can kill penalties, absolutely. And I mean, in a team that lacks depth, in a team that would be looking for maybe a number 9, number 10 winger, probably not a specialist in the defensive aspect of the game, but maybe like to complement a third scoring line. They've got the room to maneuver in terms of in terms of salary cap. Pitlick is you could do worse. I mean, the Canadiens took a flyer on him last year, and it paid dividends pretty much right from the moment that Martin Saint-Louis took over. He recognized himself a little bit in the player. He's young enough at 25 that another team could take that gamble. Now, the fact that, again, he's got 2 years on his contract this year and next year is sort of a shield. So in the event that he doesn't get claimed, well, he's going to end up in the American League, which is a story that he knows all too well. So far in his young NHL career, he's been up and down pretty much with every organization he's been with. But if he's not claimed, it's certainly not the end of Rem Pitlick in Montreal. I think it's just a transitory situation that could get solved later on in the season with other players leaving and him potentially still being with the team.
Yeah, if he gets through. I mean, you look at the Washington Capitals injured list right now. Obviously, there were some rumblings that Pierre LeBrun, our colleague, mentioned that the Canadiens were talking to the Washington Capitals about potentially completing some sort of trade to help, both situations, both in Montreal and in Washington. I mean, you look, Nicholas Backstrom out long-term, Connor Brown out long-term, Carl Hagelin out long-term, TJ Oshie out, Tom Wilson out. It's, they have a need there. And so when you look at Rem Pitlick and you see him for what he is, which is a useful hockey player, not a star by any stretch of the imagination, but a guy who can get you, who can give you some decent NHL minutes and play a variety of roles, as you just mentioned. This looks like a pretty decent situation for a Washington team that has a good amount of LTIR space available to them. So it's,
yeah, but they already claimed Nicolas Aubé-Kubel. They're currently at 23 guys on their roster, so would have to make a corresponding move if they were to get Pitlick. But yeah, you're right. It's not impossible. I think though, my sense is that Martin Saint-Louis would like to continue working with that player, and if it was entirely up to him and there was only hockey considerations, Pitlick's probably not the player that St. Louis would have told his GM, say, hey, maybe we could waive that guy. Certainly not. He would have continued to work this player and to work with this player. And let's actually, since we mentioned Martin St. Louis, let's hear what he had to say about that situation today involving Rem Pitlick.
Rem has seen a lot of growth in the last like 10 months, year. Unfortunately for him, this happens, but I know he's going to stay the course, and I think he has the potential of being a really good player in this league. It's just an unfortunate situation for him today, but it's part of a career. I look back at mine at 25, I was trying to get a jersey, so sometimes you just got to stay the course, and I know Rem will do that.
So ever since Pitlick entered the lineup last year, when I said that St. Louis recognized himself in him a little bit, it goes back to the day where he said, I think the team was playing in Philadelphia, and He said, you know, he pointed out the fact that when he was playing for the Calgary Flames, Martin St-Louis was basically pushed aside because the Flames had to promote two of their former first-round picks, Daniel Tkachuk and Rico Fatta, who both have very nondescript careers. And the term that he used was that he felt he was squeezed in favor of those guys. And he said, well, Pitlick in Minnesota was squeezed because of Matthew Boldy being called up. Uh-huh. So that's how he ended up on waivers. And that's how he was claimed by Montreal. Now, this time around, it would be odd that another team would pick him up because he would be squeezed by Evgeny Dadonov returning from injury or by other guys that the Canadians choose not to put on waivers. So it suggests somewhere that they're still banking on the possibility that they might extract some value at some point down the line, either from Dadonov, from Drouin, or from Hoffman.
Yeah, and it's also just not that simple trading any of those players right now.
No kidding.
It would be the ultimate, sell low situation, which is not ideal. Also, those players are not as easy to have this conversation with to say that we are going to put you on waivers, because let's be clear, if Rem Pitlick clears waivers, he is going to Laval. He's not sticking around the team. The reason why he's on waivers is because they don't have room for him in Montreal. So, you know, there was a possibility, in my opinion, that we would see either a Dadonov or a Hoffman, or maybe even a Drouin, in this situation. Like, the Canadians saying, well, we think we can get Rem Pitlick through waivers because of the second year on his deal. I would say that they would know for a fact that they could get Mike Hoffman through waivers, or Jonathan Drouin through waivers, or even Evgeny Dadonov through waivers. So the matter there is going to a veteran player and saying, we're going to send you to Laval once you get through waivers, and you're going to have to bide your time until we can fix this situation. So I suspected that maybe that would be an avenue the Canadians might go down. Not going down that avenue risks them losing Rem Pitlick, which frankly would not be the end of the world. Let's be honest here. I mean, you don't want to lose a player for nothing, but it is what it is. But really, the guys that I think are squeezing Rem Pitlick is not Evgeny Dadonov. It's Juraj Slafkovský and Michael Pedzeta. Like, these are the two guys that have squeezed Rem Pitlick out of Montreal. Juraj Slafkovský makes a ton of sense. I know a lot of people would probably rather him be playing in Laval, playing 18, 20 minutes a night, playing on the top power play, getting all the reps that you get in the AHL, instead of playing a fourth line role in Montreal and second power play unit. I think the Canadians are quite happy with how things are going with Slafkovský, and they're quite happy to slowly give him more as the season goes along and as he shows that he's ready for it. The one really interesting guy to me is Michael Pedzeta. He is a guy who's played one game this season. He's never complained. He works super hard in practice. He's on the ice late after practice because he's an extra. And he's just living the life of being in waiver prison, basically. Like, this is what Michael Pedzeta, we see this often, where guys that teams don't want to put on waivers wind up in a situation like Michael Pedzeta. And I think it says something. It's quite something of what the Canadians think of Michael Pedzeta. I think most people look at him as, well, he's an energy guy, a fourth line guy. And, if that guy got lost on waivers, it would be unfortunate, but it wouldn't be the end of the world, because he can't crack the lineup right now. It's been, he's not playing. But I find it really interesting the extent to which the Canadians value him because of what's becoming a sort of dwindling supply of guys who can provide the types of things that Michael Pedzeta can provide. You know, heavy forechecker, drop the gloves if necessary, be a physical presence, energy guy, someone that the dressing room likes having around, is kind of a dying breed The Michael Pizzettas of this world don't reach the NHL as often as they used to, but he has had an excellent attitude. And as I wouldn't say not as luck would have it, but just as the situation was that Michael Pizzetta, his neighbor in the dressing room in Brossard, is Rem Pitlick. And so today Michael Pizzetta after practice was taken off his equipment. Next to his locker is the full locker of Rem Pitlick, full of equipment because he didn't practice with the team today. And I had a chance to ask him about the fact that his locker room neighbor is on waivers and Michael Pizzetta, despite playing fewer games than Rem Pitlick this year, is not on waivers and is still on the team. And let's hear what he had to say.
Obviously, it feels good to still be here. It's tough to see Peter go. He was a really good guy, and I know he worked hard and he wants it really bad. So wherever he ends up, I know he'll become successful because of how much he wants to be better every day. But like for me, obviously, it's nice to still be here, still be around. And obviously, they value my game. Like they know what I can bring to the table. They know that given the opportunity, like what I'm going to bring. So I think that's something that you don't need 10 guys like that, but you need one guy in your locker room and two guys in your locker room that come to work every day, give it 110% on the ice. Like, you know what to expect from them. Like, bring energy, bring that kind of game. And I can play hockey too, so just waiting for that opportunity.
So that's kind of a gives you an idea of the type of guy Michael Pizzetta is and how he's in an interesting spot because he feels fortunate that he's in the NHL. He's living a dream. He's reached his dream, except he cannot get in the lineup. And he's clear to mention that he's not happy with the current situation. Not that he's going to have a bad attitude about it, but he wants to play well enough. He wants to play. He wants to earn a spot in the lineup. And so, this is what's fascinating to me about this player is the degree to which the Canadiens value him. I mean, Martin Saint-Louis today, after practice, said he sees Pizzetta one day playing a big role on this team. Okay. I mean, that's fine and good. But it just goes to show to what extent, you know, development is not a linear line. You know, it's not a linear thing. It can have some curves and circumstances can get in there. But you know, if there's one player on this team that has probably spent the most one-on-one time with Martin Saint-Louis on the ice, probably Michael Pizzetta, because Martin Saint-Louis stays on with the extras, as I mentioned earlier, and Michael Pizzetta is often one of those guys who gets that intimate, close, you know, work attention from the head coach. And who is probably the only head coach in the NHL who does that. I can say that with 99% assurance that there's no other NHL head coach who spends his time after every single morning skate working with the extras. So for Martin Saint-Louis to say that about Michael Pizzetta, it's not just him talking. Because he could have said a whole bunch of other things when asked about it today. But he said he sees Michael Pizzetta having a role on this team in the future. And so that's got to be great for someone like him to hear. And unfortunately, the nature of the waiver system is that Rem Pitlick is kind of the victim of that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, but, you know, Pizzetta might not have the size of a Nicolas Deslauriers or Matt Martin, but down the road in a few years, because of the increased rarity of this player profile, a guy that say, well, he could be a career fourth liner, but remain in the NHL as a fourth liner, such as Delorier, such as Matt Martin. You could, it's worth holding on to a guy like that who's not going to make a fuss because he's not playing as much as he would like to, even though he would like to play. So I think that there's a long-term investment in a player like this. Whereas the other guys, the veterans that are more high profile, that are all at least former 20-goal scorer plus, those guys in 2 years are not going to be with the team anymore. And those are the players that Kent Hughes is trying to move at this point. And when we hear Pierre LeBrun saying that the Canadiens, that Hughes is making phone calls trying to move a guy like that, the issue right now, whether he tries to move Dadonov, Hoffman, Drouin, or whoever, is those guys are, you try to solve a roster issue because you've got too many bodies. And those guys are all higher salary guys. So if you want to move those players without getting a body back, well, you have to find a team that's got a ton of cap space. And they're not, if they have that much cap space, they're not going to spend it on guys like this. If the Canadians are looking for drafts or prospects, they're not going to be able to get that, at least at this time of the year, with that sort of player. And if you look at, let's say, what they would want to get bad contract back, it's certainly not going to be a forward, because they would remain in the same situation. They would still have one forward too many, so it would defeat the purpose. And if you want to look at a defenseman, well, the defensemen that are higher salaries and whose contract finishes at the end of this season, well, they're all guys that teams are not going to be interested in moving. And if they choose to do so at some point, they're going to be able to get a lot more value for these players. Whether it's John Klingberg, Shane Gostisbehere, Kevin Shattenkirk. So all those guys there, I mean, the Canadians would not be able to move a Hoffman or a Dadonov for a guy like this. So they're a bit stuck right now. They have to deal for the time being with the fact that these overpaid or unproductive wingers are on the team, and you have to slalom your way through that and find somebody else to solve your problem, hence Rem Pitlick.
Well, no, you don't have to slalom your way. What they have to do is they have to play these guys and get them to produce. They have to get them to make themselves more valuable on the trade market. So right now, since no one on the team is really scoring aside from Nick Suzuki or Cole Caulfield, and right now it's Kirby Dach playing with them, but really Suzuki and Caulfield are the only ones driving the offense. This is kind of a side issue with that current offensive, top heavy offense that the Canadians have right now, which is really, if you think back to before the season started, the one thing I didn't think, at least, the Canadians would have trouble with would be like scoring depth. Like I thought they were going to have lots of scoring depth, and they don't have that right now. So it's Sean Monahan spoke to reporters today after practice, and it hasn't been like a massive dry spell, but I think he's got a point in his last five games, an assist. It was going really well for a while. He hasn't been all that productive, but really when I think of it, you look at Hoffman, Drouin, like the options to play on the wing for him are not getting the job done. I mean, listen, based on practice today, Sean Monahan is likely to play with Jonathan Drouin and Evgeny Dadonov, depending on what happens between now and the game in Detroit. But it's just been a revolving door around Sean Monahan. He's played on the wing with Suzuki and Caulfield this year. He's had time with a number of guys, Hoffman, Anderson, a whole bunch of these wingers have gotten time with Sean Monahan. And just from the eye test, he doesn't seem to be playing all that poorly. But as Martin St. Louis mentioned, like, he'd like to get some runway for some of these other lines to play together more often. and build some chemistry, because they haven't had that with all the guys coming in and out. So there's like a doubly important reason to make that happen. A is that you cannot survive on Nick Suzuki and Cole Caufield scoring all your goals. But B, you look at Joy Dadonov and to a lesser extent Hoffman, you're looking at, and even throw Monahan in there, you know, you're looking at three of the Canadians, what they thought were their best trade chips, looking towards the deadline. And if Kent Hughes wants to get a first round pick somehow out of that group of players, Monahan was the guy who, if he found his former self production wise, you could maybe conceivably get a first round pick from a team that really needs a good veteran scoring centerman. So there are a lot of factors here, and they have to, and it all comes down to getting, in my mind, getting these wingers up to speed production wise and getting them going here.
Yeah. When you talk about the revolving doors around Sean Monahan, here's the stat. Monahan 5-on-5 has played a little less than 145 minutes. He's had 6 forwards with whom he played more than 30 minutes. So that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot of different guys. So it's tricky at this point. I listen, as long as the Canadians continue the experiment of having Kirby Dach playing with Caufield and Suzuki, which I think for the time being, just because it works so well, there are no rush to stop that experiment. But Kirby Dach is a centerman, and as long as you keep him as a winger on that first line, the next best option you have with the current roster as your second line centerman is Sean Monahan. And as you pointed out, he's also the team's best chance to be to earn a first round pick in return at the trade deadline. So I think that right now the biggest task up front is to build a second line that will be solid. There's been all sorts of attempts that've been done with left, right, and center. I think that it'd be time to look at other options. The numbers with, oddly enough, the numbers with Mike Hoffman have not been too bad, although in limited time. But I mean, Monahan and Hoffman together, it seems to be working rather decent. But otherwise, I think that one option that has not been considered yet, it's Brendan Gallagher. Brendan Gallagher has been stitched to Christian Dvorak since the beginning of training camp. Things have not worked out too well, but as Martin Saint-Louis pointed out today, the in-house metrics that they have, the data that they've got, suggests that based on his play, based on his chances, shot location or whatever, Brendan Gallagher should have produced a lot more than he has so far. So whether it's bad luck or anything like that, their message is clearly keep doing what you do and eventually the puck will go in. But if it doesn't go in with Christian Dvorak, I think it would be worth to ask him to do the same thing, but with Sean Monahan. And then who knows? I mean, without expecting that Brendan Gallagher might revert into the 30-goal scorer he once was or expect any sort of production that was comparable, that would be comparable to what he used to be. Still, I think that he's one of the wingers that would provide Monahan with the best chance of being effective now that Monahan is not playing with Suzuki and Caufield. So, and the other guy is Slafkovský. I mean, he's been, right now, he's being kept on the fourth line. They manage his minutes. Maybe it's just a byproduct of the fact that they're playing on the road against Detroit. They had a rough time against Detroit the last time go around in the second game of the season. But if it's not working out with the Hoffmans, the Drouins, and the Dadonovs, you have to look at other options. And I feel that Slafkovský and Gallagher could provide that bump for Monahan.
Yeah, just, you know, when Martin mentioned the internal numbers that they have, and obviously their numbers are far more sophisticated than the publicly available numbers, but even the publicly available numbers, in terms of individual expected goals at 5-on-5 this season, Cole Caulfield is first, obviously. Brendan Gallagher is second, according to Natural Stat Trick. So he is individual expected goals. Individual high danger chances, Gallagher is first on the team with 14. Caulfield is second at 9. So it's not so what he says tracks, you know, it's you don't need access to the Canadiens' internal data. You can get it with the publicly available data. He is producing opportunities. You know, Martin St. Louis, in answering that question, was asked, you know, Gallagher is often produced thanks to a volume shooting mentality. At 5-on-5, most shot attempts on the team, Brendan Gallagher, 49. You know, his shot numbers at 5-on-5, shots on goal, he is second to Cole Caulfield. And Cole Caulfield has 32, which is just a ridiculous number in 12 games. But, you know, Gallagher's number at 26 is pretty good. You know who's third on the team in shots on goal at 5-on-5? Arbor Jacki.
No way.
I swear to God. Yeah. But, you know, so everything that Martin St. Louis said about Gallagher, it's verifiable just based on the numbers that we have available to us, let alone what they have available to them. So, and it's a tricky thing for Gallagher. I talked to him about this actually, in St. Louis. This was actually for a piece on Christian Dvorak, who was also showing signs that he was doing the right thing, just wasn't getting the numbers. And just so happened that right after writing that article, he scored a hat trick. But for Gallagher, you know, this notion that, and this was, I guess, an interesting little exchange, because he was kind of like, you know, I've always said that I'm willing to do whatever it takes for the team to win. I just want to help the team win. And I was just kind of like, always? Really? Like when you were 24, 25, like you didn't care about your goal numbers as long as you were winning games? I don't know about that. He's like, and he insisted. And we actually went back and forth. And then he thought about it. He stopped. He thought about it. He's like, no, you know what? I'm going with always. I always felt this way. And he started to get a little annoyed with me. But I think, you know, right now, I didn't have a chance to talk to him today. I know he spoke to reporters today, but I just don't get the sense. I don't get the same sense of frustration from Brendan Gallagher as I was feeling the last 2 years when it was physically difficult for him to play.
Right.
It doesn't seem physically difficult for him to play now. He's not getting rewarded for whatever he's doing. But it's not, I don't feel the same brand of frustration coming off of him. And maybe he's actually telling the truth. Maybe all he does care about is helping the team win and doesn't care if he scores goals or not. But you know, I mean, I would agree with you that getting Gallagher away from Dvorak, the problem with that is that Martin has clearly given Gallagher and Dvorak a specific task. Go start a lot of your shifts in the defensive zone. Go play against some tough opponents. Help us in situations where it's precarious for us, where we'd rather not have a Slafkovský on the ice. We'd rather not have a Caulfield on the ice even though he's been facing some really difficult situations as well. But, you know, get us through this shift so that our other lines can have an easier time on their shifts. And that's the role that Gallagher's had for a while now. You know, he had that with Phil, Dano. Now he seems to have that to some extent, not to the same extent as he did with Dano, but to some extent with Dvorak. And with Dvorak being, I would say, less of an offensive facilitator than Dano was back then. And Gallagher being a different player, frankly, at this point than he was back then. But I think playing with a guy like Monahan would be worth a try. It really would.
Because
I agree with you.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, because I mean, I understand that role is even more clear for Dvorak than it is for Gallagher, even though, as you point out, he's been doing that also with Deno before. But Dvorak, I think, if he had other wingers, could roughly play the same brand of hockey. I don't know if the level of effectiveness would be the same, if the goals against would start going up. But at some point, when you have so many of those offensive wingers that don't produce and that are harder to find spots for, well, when you have three of them, you know, they have to play somewhere. They're bound to be on somebody's line at some point. You cannot bury them on the fourth line, all of them, because Evans and Armia also have their own role to play. So it's a bit problematic, but I think that if Gallagher deserves to be rewarded for his efforts, and at some point you just hope that luck will turn and he's going to be rewarded, well, it's a good, probably a good bet to say, well, we're going to bank on the fact that it's going to happen, and we just happen to have another line that really needs to be ignited. And there used to be a time where Gallagher was the great igniter on that team. You know, he would jumpstart any line that needed to.
He was Michel Therrien's Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah.
That's what he was. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, but anyway, so we'll see. But my feeling is that Sean Monahan cannot be left in this flux for too long a period. If he is not going to play with Suzuki and Caulfield, he's a very good player in his own right. I think it's important that they find, even more so than for Dvorak, I think that it's important that they find like chemistry in the shorter term, because it's going to be, A, help his trade value, and B, if his line becomes productive, it's going to relieve some of the pressure on Suzuki and Caulfield, because let's face it, this is not, that line, as good as it's been since the beginning of the season, is not going to continue to produce at that rate for 82 games. I mean, at some point, there's a level.
Of course not.
There's a level that's unsustainable there. So and the other teams are going to put their onus on that, on defending and against that one line. You need to have threats somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I can assure you that Nick Suzuki is not going to be shooting at 31.25% at 5-on-5 for the whole season.
Right.
So, so you know, that's something to keep in mind, of course. But yeah, so yeah, it's an issue, but at the same time, it's not. I mean, this is why, like, you know, we like to use the Monday show to sort of look ahead at the week, and it's funny, you know, you look at the NHL standings. This is on Monday afternoon, obviously, and the Canadiens are sort of starting to settle in where we kind of expected them to be. They're 5-6-1, 11 points in 12 games, 458 points percentage. They're starting to work their way back down towards the bottom end of the Eastern Conference standings. So this week, as we mentioned, they're in Detroit on Tuesday, but then they have two opponents who have far different expectations this season. And so while the Canadiens' first 12 games, I think universally could be called a success in terms of they've exceeded expectations. You have the Vancouver Canucks in town on Wednesday, and then you have the Pittsburgh Penguins in town on Saturday. Two teams that are playing far below expectations and have like really urgent kind of timelines to get this thing right. You know, I mean, the Canucks are below the Coyotes in the standings.
Yeah.
It's not acceptable for a team that's behaving as though they're in a window. You know, when you sign JT Miller to the contract they signed him to, rather than trade him for a first round pick, which I think they easily could have gotten, if not more than that, that's the behavior of a team that believes they're on the verge of something, that something's going to happen good relatively soon.
But they're 3-1-1 in their last five. They've been picking up points in four of their last five games, so they seem to be to be correcting course a little bit. Their captain, Bo Horvat, has taken charge over there a little bit, like John Tavares has in in Toronto. You know, it's interesting to see like the captain stand up and say, okay, enough of that.
Yeah. You know? And it's quite coincidental that it came around the time that, you know, trade rumors start popping up, because he's a free agent. He's going to need a contract next year. So if you're the Canucks, do you continue behaving like all is good and just keep, you know, keep this core together and this will work? Or do you do something drastic and trade a guy like Bo Horvat at the deadline and get a first round pick, which I'm sure they could get if they ever decide to go down that road? That would not even be an issue. But, you know, the situation is obviously quite different in Pittsburgh, where, you know, that window is being held open a touch by, you know, by Sid and Letang, and they go out, they get Jeff Petrie. You know, they're trying to get one more championship with that group, and they're off to a terrible start. You know,
they haven't won a game in their past seven.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that this ever happened under Sid in the Crosby era. Not sure.
Yeah, so I'd have to look that up. But you know, it's just the one thing I'll say about, so these are, you know, not their next two opponents, but the two opponents with which the Canadiens will close out this week. And what struck me Saturday night, like the difference here in Montreal, is that on Saturday night, at the end of the game, the Canadiens lose the game and get a wonderful little mini ovation as they leave the ice. Because the game was entertaining, exactly. Because the Canadiens didn't give up. They put on a good performance, and the paying customers left the building satisfied with what they saw, even though the Canadiens lost. Listen, we've both been covering this team a very long time. And in the month of November, for a home crowd to react to their team that way after a loss, at a time of the year where, you know, hope is usually still alive for this team and has been for a very long time, where the Canadiens have considered themselves a playoff caliber team. This is the first year, we've mentioned it already, in as long as we can remember, where the Canadiens have entered the season not believing they are a playoff caliber team. In fact, planning to not be a playoff caliber team and hoping that they are not a playoff caliber team. So it was really strange. And so after the game, I asked Nick Suzuki, once he was done all his scrums and stuff, I was like, hey, what'd you think of that, that like mini ovation you got there at the end? He's like, when was that? What do you do? Like, he was like, what you mean when, and he was just trying to identify it. I was like, so you didn't actually notice the ovation? He's like, well, no, I was kind of pissed off. Like, we just lost the game. You know, I was like, I was kind of in my bubble. And so, not that he's like, I don't want to make it sound like he was ignoring the fans, but it just goes to show the different mindset of the guys on the ice who are invested and trying to win a game and believe they can. And the fans who want to see the effort, who want to see some skill and some and be entertained for the evening. And quite frankly, would probably rather they lose, you know, but all things being equal, just want the show and want the effort and want to see some degree of promise for the future. So when Suzuki scores and Caulfield scores, Slafkovsky scored in that game, you know, you get some of the kids involved, the crowd goes home happy, but, you know.
Gouley had a great game on Saturday.
Gouley had a fantastic game. It's funny, I actually had a quick chat with him after practice today, and I was like, so is this starting to feel normal to you yet? And he's like, no, not at all. No, not at all. It is still very surreal. He's like, the one thing that's getting normal is like facing NHL opponents, but I still think the hotels and the charter flights and just the whole lifestyle is still so new to him. And I was like, well, you should start feeling like you belong on the ice, right? Like when, you know, the way now you're a dozen games in, you've been playing these guys. And he's like, a little bit. I don't want to go that far yet, but I'm starting to feel it a bit. So, I mean, you want a humble guy. It's Caden Gouley is your guy for that. But just to me, this week is kind of the stark difference in expectations between Vancouver is its own unique thing. Pittsburgh is its own unique thing. And in Montreal, we're seeing something that is incredibly unique for this franchise, for this city, for this fan base. This is a relationship that I don't think I've really seen before. That ovation on Saturday was noteworthy, in my opinion.
Yeah. But it's not too dissimilar from what their opponent on Tuesday has been dealing with. I mean, the Red Wings have been through a rebuild, and they're maybe at a later stage. You just seeing how the UFA signings that they've done in the past offseason suggest that they're ready for more wins, even though they're ready for better results, even though the wins are still not the primarily criteria for them to get better. At least this season, that was made clear by Steve Yzerman prior to the season. But they're
7-3-2, man. I mean,
yeah, I know.
They're looking really good.
They're doing yeah, absolutely. And another guy, another captain who's on the last year of his deal, but Dylan Larkin is another guy who's really playing well. I don't think that the level of engagement from fans saying, "Hey, we're buying into this this rebuild," has been embraced that the same way that it's been in Montreal so far this season. But let's not forget that the Red Wings, who were expecting, I mean, there's one season where they finished dead last in the league, and they never ended up like getting a favorable pick at the lottery. They always went down, or at worst, or at best, stayed at the same spot, but they never gained a rank. They were extremely unlucky for a stretch of maybe 5 years during their whole rebuild. And despite that, they managed to draft, you know, Raymond, Sider, and whatnot.
Yeah.
They
also drafted Zadina. They're not batting 1,000.
Nope. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So, just saying. But but they're going about it. I mean, I think the Canadians could look at Detroit and be like, if we're in a spot like them in a couple of years, then things are probably going pretty well. I think the way things are going in Detroit right now are part of a bigger plan. And that's, you know, I think that's what's appealing when, you know, going back to that ovation in Montreal, is that there's a plan and it's been clearly communicated to the fan base. It's been properly explained. It's been justified. This is one part of the Bergevin era that never came across. That what is the overarching plan here? How do all the pieces fit with that plan? How do all these individual moves fit with this overall plan? That was never clear. I never really got that. I don't think the fans did. It just seemed to be a series of individual moves that taken on their own were really good, or, you know, I think a majority of them would, you could say, that was a good trade. But they never just seemed to fit into this global vision and plan. And that's what these fans are welcoming with the Canadians now, is that it does seem clear what they're trying to do, how they're trying to do it. And so that they're being rewarded for that with patience from the fan base. Fan base is like, okay, you've explained it. You've told us what you're going to do. Now we're going to wait. We're going to wait and see. We're going to give you a chance to do it. Now, when that patience runs out, I don't know. But Saturday night was really the most tangible display of that patience I have ever seen, really, from this fan base. It was a remarkable sight. It's one thing to do that at the end of the season, like when the season's over, like last year. It was quite another to do it in early November after a hard-fought loss against a very good team, number one team in the league at the time. To have the players leave to an ovation was quite something.
But you mentioned it. I mean, it being entertaining is a big, big key through all this. And thank goodness the younger players on the Canadiens provide a ton of excitement at this point. I just want to remind all of our listeners that we have a voicemail that you can just drop a message and we could play it. You ask us a question and we'll be happy to answer it. So don't hesitate. Feel free to call 646 646-847-9404. That's 646-847-9404. That's our voicemail number. So so please don't be shy. Name yourselves. Ask us a question. And if there are many, well, we'll pick among them and we'll be glad to have you participate into the Athletic support. As for us, well, that's it for this week. We'll be back on Friday with Le Super Athletic. So, Arpin, have a good week. And, well, take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.